Welcome to The Apple Seed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today's stories are both funny stories about folks having close calls with death. And yeah, you heard right. I said funny stories about close calls with death. There's not much grim in these Grim Reaper stories. In fact, they're both fanciful tales about tricky folks who avoid taking that last ride. Tricking death out of his grisly prize has been a favorite subject for storytellers since folks have been telling stories. And in that tradition, we've got an old story and a new story for you today. First, the old one. The storyteller here is Debs Newbold, who lives in the UK and joined us in the studio for a rollicking performance of an old tale called The Old Woman Who Cheated Death. Here's Debs on the Appleseed.
Hello. I want to tell you about the oldest woman in the world and how come she's so old, right? She's so old, she doesn't remember how old she is, which is a good thing, really, when you get to a certain age, I am told. But one day, when she knew she was about 89, she was in her house. And this woman, she'd lived many years in this house, many years on this earth, and most of those years, she'd enjoyed. She'd found the joys in all of the troubles, and she'd found the fun in all the best things. And so she journeyed through this life with a light heart. She was one of those people that were blessed with that. I'll give you an example. On this particular morning, in her 89th year, allegedly, she was sweeping the floor. Sweeping the floor of her kitchen, a boring job, yes, but this morning, through the window, the sun was streaming in, and the sun was lighting up the motes of dust that curled up from her broom, and she watched them curl like tresses in the air, and she was enjoying the ticking of the clock on the mantelpiece, the sound of the birds outside. Shh, shh, shh. She was utterly absorbed in this task. When she felt a chill come underneath the door, and the sun went in, and the clock on the mantelpiece stopped, and the woman stood there with her broom. Outside, the birds had stopped singing. She was sure of it. And the moment she thought that, she heard a scuffing sound on the path, the stone path that led up to her house. And there was a knock at the door. She put her broom down. She wasn't expecting anybody. She walked up to the door of her house, drew herself up to as much height as she had, and opened the door with a creak. And there, standing on the doorstep, was a figure much taller than her, pale. Eyes that she couldn't quite see. They were set back so far in his face. He was cloaked from head to toe in black with a hood and a scythe. And for those of you who are a bit sleepy at the back, this is death, all right? The Grim Reaper. He's come for her. The woman freezes on the doorstep, but the Grim Reaper holds up his arm and points a bony finger at the woman. It's time, old woman. You've lived a good life. You're coming with me. Now, I told you, this woman, she was about 89, so she'd had a lot of experiences in her life, and she was not going to go with some stranger who's just asking her to leave her house. Plus, I also told you that she enjoys her life. And if this chancer in the dark hood certainly is who he says he is, there's no way she's going to go with him. She's enjoying herself. So she says, oh, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Death. I'm sweeping my floor. I've just done my kitchen, but I've got the stairs and all of the upstairs rooms to do, you know. I'm busy. I can't go with you now. She's trying to hedge her bets while she thinks about her plan, do you know what I mean? I can't go with you now. I really can't. I've got plenty of chores on my list. Death didn't need this, frankly. He had a very busy day ahead of him, which was unlucky for some, but he kind of liked those kinds of days. He had a lot of people to row across the River Styx. He checked his chart and then he checked his watch. Frankly, he didn't have the time to remonstrate with this woman who seemed hell-bent on staying exactly where she was. So he thought to himself, right, well, I do have a little gap in my schedule tomorrow. All right, he said, okay, you can stay here today. You can finish your chores. But you are coming with me tomorrow. Yes, 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 I'll come with you tomorrow. Tomorrow, yes, tomorrow, tomorrow, said Death. And just to be sure, he scratched on the door, on the lovely polished oak door, right? I know, terrible, isn't it? She did that herself, the woman. Took her ages. He took his bony finger and he scratched, he's left-handed, Death, everyone knows that. He scratched the word tomorrow into the varnish on the door and swept away as dramatically as he could. And suddenly, the sun came out, the birds started singing, the clock started ticking on the mantelpiece. The woman breathed a sigh of relief and went back to her sweeping. Shook, shook, shook. Next day, she's out the back and she's planting seeds, beans. She's got rows and canes all laid out and the sun is shining and the birds are singing. The sky is azure over her head and she's enjoying the seemingly mindless task of putting each one of these beans into their little soil bed, tucking them in, pushing them down, watering them. She's absorbed in this task, enjoying it like she enjoys everything. Completely in her own world, when suddenly the sun clouds over and goes in. Inside the house, she hears the clock stop, the birds, and that chill feeling. And she hears the footsteps and thinks, oh no. What am I going to do? Okay, be bold. She walks in through the back door of her house, through the kitchen, just as the door raps three times. She opens the door. Ah, you again, she says. The Grim Reaper is there, ready, looking very businesslike this morning. Yes, me again. I have come for you. You've lived a good life. You've lived a longer life than most. You are coming with me. No, 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 said the woman. I've got things to do. I've just planted my beans. I've got me carrots to do. And, you know, I've got potatoes to put in. I've got weeding. I can't come with you today. Death was really, he was getting a little bit tetchy. You are coming with me today. Today, you said, you promised, I heard you on this doorstep. You are coming with me today, old woman. She said, oh, no, no, you must be mistaken, Mr. Death. We agreed that I'd be coming with you tomorrow. And there in Death's own scratchy left hand is the word tomorrow on the door. She's a wily one, thinks Death. Well, he knew he'd been had. And he thought to himself, well, I could argue with her, but really, she's a little too sharp for me, this one. Okay, checks his schedule. Right, right, I'm coming back for you tomorrow and I'm going to brook absolutely no compromise. I'm coming back for you tomorrow. And he gets a scratch off the door. And in a nice, angry, dramatic swirl, he's off. Song comes out. Birds start singing, clock starts tocking on the mantelpiece. The woman breathes a sigh of relief, goes back to her planting. Day three. The woman is in the kitchen, she's kneading bread and she's really enjoying the feel of the dough. Now it's hard work kneading bread, but there's something wonderful about it too. When you feel the elasticity of the dough just as it turns, I've got a few people nodding. I've got some bread makers in the room. You know that bit when the glutens just start to string together? Oh, it's great. It's like you're a sculptor and an amazing chef all in one go. And she can feel the muscles and sinews of her arms lithe and alive and ready for anything. When the sun winks out, birds stop singing, the clock tumbles off the mantelpiece, smashes on the floor. She knows she's in trouble now. There'll be no answering that door. She feels the breeze coming underneath, the smell of the grave clothes go up her nostrils. Her heart starts to beat incredibly fast and she thinks, I've got to go, I've got to go, I've got to hide. And she scarpers upstairs as quick as a flash. This 89-year-old woman, just as Death is about to knock on the door. Now, the woman is upstairs. She's only got two rooms upstairs, her bedroom and her spare room. And she's on the little landing, the little corridor landing. It's very dark in this cottage, English cottage, tiny windows. And she's trying to get her breath and thinking, okay, there aren't many options. Where can I hide? She opens the door to her bedroom. She can't hide in the bed. He'll see her. Behind the curtains, classic. but at the bottom of her bed, there is a big barrel. Huge barrel where she keeps her honey. She's a beekeeper, this lady. And she's got her honey in this barrel and it's about 3/4 full and she thinks, this barrel is in a shadowy part of the bedroom and maybe he'll be in such a huff that he won't look in the corner of the room. Yes, 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 she convinces herself in her panic. This is precisely the right place to hide, isn't it? Yes, I can see some nods. Excellent, let's take the lid off. Let's get in. Now, the woman, although she's terrified, remember, she enjoys life. She can't help just enjoying a little bit the feeling of the honey going between her toes. Oh, oh, lovely. Oh, it's making all her clothes stick to her body in this kind of gloopy... And the honey goes... And she's like, that's quite nice, actually. Oh, no, concentrate, concentrate. She's up to her neck in the honey and she gets the lid, which is just balanced there, and she pulls it across and there she is, she's hiding. Downstairs, Death has done his 3 knocks. He's waited an appreciable amount of time and he's decided to let himself in. He opens the door with a creak. He likes that. It's quite dramatic. He walks in and the flowers on the mantelpiece wilt as he enters the room. The dough on the table dies. The yeast dies as Death walks towards it. But he can see her fist prints, the knuckle prints in that dough. She can't be far, can she? Where is she? He looks around the kitchen. Looks beyond the curtain, obviously, classic. She's not in the kitchen, nowhere. He looks at the staircase and he begins to mount the stair. Inside her bedroom, inside the honey barrel, the woman is thinking, good, good, this is good, this is good. I'm okay. I'm in a barrel of honey. He won't look here. I'm in a barrel. I'm in a barrel of honey. I'm in a... This is not okay. There's nothing okay about this. I'm in a barrel of honey in my bedroom. This is the first place he's going to look. Oh, no. And in a quick moment of decision, she flings the lid off the honey barrel. I know, I don't want her to do it either, but this is the story. These are the facts. She flings the lid off. She gets out. Quite enjoys that. It's kind of suction. The dress goes rip like that. It's lovely. Oh, it comes from between her fingers. Tasty. No, concentrate. Out of the barrel. And she puts the lid back on as best she can. And she runs out of the bedroom, across the landing, just as Death is coming up the third stair. It's okay, though. Don't forget, dark landing. She's got just enough time to dash. Don't be scared. She gets to the next room. She shuts the door behind her. It's okay. But when she's in that room, she thinks, oh, no. Oh, where am I going to hide? There's a spare bed, can't hide under the bed, classic. What am I going to do? I could try and get into that cupboard. No, I'll never fit. At the base of the bed, tucked just underneath this high bed, there's a box, long box, wooden box, where she keeps all of the feathers that she's plucked from geese and chickens. I don't know why you're laughing, it's a perfectly good place to hide. At least this is what she thinks, right? She stuffs her blankets and her mattresses with this stuff and she thinks, oh, it'd be nice. Anyway, it'd be a nice place to hide. And it's slightly tucked under the bed in the shadowy part of the bedroom. Brilliant. In a moment of decision, she throws the lid off. She gets inside. She snuggles herself down and it is nice. She just thinks, oh, even though she's panicked, oh, it's quite pleasant, isn't it? Ah, oh, sensory pleasure. Lovely, lovely soft feathers. Oh, tickly. Oh, no, concentrate. Puts the lid on. She hides there. And she becomes completely still and her breathing becomes nice and quiet. Just to Death is closing his bony hands around the handle of the bedroom opposite. He throws open the door and he looks everywhere, nothing. Can't find her. So he turns and looks across the landing at the only other room available. Inside that room, inside the long box of feathers, the woman is thinking, great, this is brilliant. Oh, be quiet. Oh, feathers, oh dear, it's good. I'm in a box of feathers. I'm in a box of feathers. This is not good. This is daft. What am I doing in here? This is absolutely the first place he's going to look. And in a moment of decision, she throws off the lid of this box and she takes one leg, gets out, lifts herself up and out of this box. And she's standing there, one leg in, one leg out, as the door opens. And Death is there. And the woman is so terrified by the sight, so terrified by her lack of a forward-thinking plan, that she begins to do what she doesn't often do. She begins to wail in anguish. shrieking as loud as she can. She's, you know, when you get a bit panicky and you do that with your hands. Death looks this thing up and down, this creature. What on earth is this? No wonder it had to be hidden in the spare bedroom. What on earth is... I've had no training for this. This wasn't in the training session. This creature, in all of his wanderings in this world and others, he has never seen anything to match this creature. Tiny, squat little creature, covered head to toe in brown, grey, black, and sort of a strange tawny coloured feathers, that some of which are dropping off them, and waggling their malformed wings up and down, emitting this high-pitched shriek, and what's worse, some strange ectoplasmic ooze is dripping off her. Puddling at her feet, Death is absolutely terrified. And he does what he has never done before and has never done since. He turns on his bony heel. He runs down the stairs. He skitters across the kitchen. He goes out through the door, down the stone path, over the wall, and out through that village as fast as his black moccasins will carry him. Because Death likes wearing slippers, like comfy, comfy shoes. He's got a lot of walking to do. And he never comes back, lest he sees that creature again. The woman, it takes her a while to calm down. It takes her a bit longer to work out how to manage the hose fitment so she can... But once she's settled and understands what's happened, she begins to think that maybe she's got longer than most to enjoy her life. And sure enough, these are the facts. She's there in her cottage at the end of the lane, sweeping her kitchen, planting her beans, baking her bread, old as the hills, and taking all the joy she can out of what life she has. Thank you.
That was Debs Newbold with her story, The Old Woman Who Cheated Death. And listening to this story reminds me of the folks I know who seem to be able to get away with stuff that the rest of us could never pull off. You know anyone like that? I do. I know a guy who was driving to catch a plane at a little airport outside of a little out-of-the-way town one time. He was running late as he came through town, and his foot was a little heavy on the gas pedal. He was speeding. And what do you know? The long arm of the law caught up with him, just like the Grim Reaper. But it wasn't the Grim Reaper, it was just the local police. And my friend pulled over to the side of the road, and he did an unusual thing. Before the officer even had a chance to walk up to his car, my friend pulled a pen and a piece of paper out of the glove compartment, and he wrote three numbers down on the piece of paper. And when the officer reached the car, my friend handed him the piece of paper through the window and said, "Here's my driver's license number, my registration number, and the number of my insurance policy. Issue me a ticket if you have to, but you'll have to put it in the mail. I'm late and I got a plane to catch." And with that, my friend drove off, leaving the officer standing by the side of the road. And you know what? The officer didn't chase him down, nor did the officer send my friend a ticket. Now, I don't know anyone who'd even try a stunt like that, except my friend, of course, let alone anyone who could have gotten away with it. I know I'd never even try. Seems we all know people who have that uncanny ability to weasel their way out of something they've got coming. For the rest of us, all I can say is that when something so serious as the Grim Reaper comes for me, I don't think I know any tricks good enough to keep from going along. I can hope, I guess, that I spent my life in a way that lets me rest easy as I go. That's the only trick I've ever felt like I could get away with. And that's where Deb's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along?
There's a lot yet to come on today's episode, but I wanted to take just a moment to introduce you to another one of the shows from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The show is called Constant Wonder. It's hosted by Marcus Smith. And in every episode of Constant Wonder, Marcus will have a riveting conversation with an individual whose life has been touched by the awe and wonder in nature, human nature, or the natural world. It's all phenomenal. Uncover captivating stories stories that shed light on the wonders of creation. And you'll walk away feeling a little awestruck yourself from just about every episode. It's Constant Wonder with Marcus Smith. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to Constant Wonder whenever you like. Get a little dose of awe. Constant Wonder from BYU Radio. It's such a pleasure to be with you today on the Appleseed Podcast. It's an episode filled with stories of tricksters who cheat death. And we promised you an old story and a new story today. Well, if the old woman who cheated death is the old one, here's the new one. And if the trickster in the first story was the old woman, we'd have to say that the trickster in this one is the storyteller himself. It's the West Virginia tall tale teller Bill Lepp, who has a practice of making up a whole shaggy dog tale in order just to be able to say the last line. Bill Lepp with a story called Three Preachers.
I was a United Methodist pastor for about 4 years, and my first churches were in a little town called Meadow Bridge, West Virginia. And after I'd been there for about 6 months, the local religious leaders decided that all the pastors from the area ought to come to a meeting in Beckley, which was about a half an hour away. So I volunteered to drive. And we were coming home. I had the Catholic priest and the Baptist minister in the back seat of my car. And in the front seat of the car, I had won as a door prize. I had won an offering plate that was about that big around. And it had 401k etched in the side of it. It was lined in velvet. I had that sitting on the seat next to me. And then being three preachers, naturally we'd stopped on the way home and bought a bucket of fried chicken. So that was sitting between me and the offering plate. And then in the offering plate was my dog, a buck dog. He's my super dog. His mother was a German Shepherd. His father was a Basset Hound. And while Buck inherited his mother's good looks, he got his daddy's legs in the bargain. So he looks just like a German Shepherd that swallowed a kayak. And he had curled up in that offering plate and had gone to sleep. But we were going down Sandstone Mountain, and a blizzard hit. And I was forced to pull over to the side of the road. And I looked in the rearview mirror, and I saw an 18-wheeler coming down the mountain straight for the back of my car. Nothing I could do. And just before it hit, Buck Dog sensed the tension. Woke up, looked out the back window, saw what was about to happen, grabbed that bucket of fried chicken, and pulled it in the offering plate with him. So when that truck hit, it shot Buck Dog out the windshield in that offering plate, flying through the sky like a frisbee with that bucket of chicken. And then me and the Catholic priest and the Baptist minister flew out the window next. Well, the truck split in half. And it was carrying tennis shoes. About 50,000 pair of shoes flew out into the sky. Buck Dog flew all the way down the mountain to the New River, which was frozen over. And he hit so hard that it bounced his hind end out of the offering plate. But the chicken was still in the offering plate, so Buck was holding on as tight as he could with his front end sliding across the ice. And then me and the shaman and the Mormon bishop hit the ice next. Trying to be inclusive. We hit the ice next and slid across the ice after Buck Dog as those 50,000 pair of shoes fell into the woods. And that's when I said to those two guys with me, I said, I sure hope nobody's watching us, because here we are, three preachers living up to all the stereotypes people have about clergy. What with us out on the thin ice, chasing half a buck in the offering plate and a bowl full of fried chicken, while 100,000 souls are lost in the wilderness behind us.
That was Bill Lepp with a story called Three Preachers. Did you ever have a time when you had to weasel out of something you had coming?
And when you hear about folks who comically trick their way out of big consequences, is there a person that comes to mind from your own life? Is it you? Did you ever have a wild adventure you thought would do you in, but you squeaked by? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. In fact, one of our favorite storytellers, Charlotte Blake Alston, recently sent us an email. She was at the St. Simon Island Storytelling Festival, a wonderful storytelling festival that a lot of our friends tell stories at. And she wanted to let us know that the young son of the hotel owner where she was staying was so excited to meet her, all because he had been listening to her on the Appleseed. It made us so happy to hear that from Charlotte. We love introducing our teller friends to new listeners. And thanks to the Epworth by the Sea Center for listening. If you have a story or a message for us, you can reach out through our social media channels, or you can email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. We want to thank Debs Newbold and Bill Lepp for their tales today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own.
The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. The rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.